This is the EMDocs.net podcast with Britt Long and Manny Singh. We bring you high-yield content about what you're seeing every day in the ED. Welcome to the podcast, and today we're going to look at something that we haven't touched too much on, and that's cardiac arrest and mental models. To do that, we have with us Zachary Ost. Zach, tell us where you work and what your primary interests in EM are.
Thanks so much for having me, Britt. I'm currently working at Baylor University Medical Center in downtown Dallas, Texas. My interests lie in airway, resuscitation, human factors performing under pressure, and decision-making in emergency medicine.
Awesome. So let's get into cardiac arrest and ROSC. Why are these important?
I think this is important because I want to specifically talk today about the patients that have had return of spontaneous circulation. I would argue that the sickest patients we take care of are those that are already dead, those in cardiac arrest, and therefore, this is our second sickest set of patients, those who have just had return of spontaneous circulation. It's the stuff that we should be the expert in. And this can be a really stressful time. There's a lots to do, lots of things to remember. So having a structured approach to help you maintain 360-degree awareness is essential. The strategy and logistics of this is going to change a lot depending on what resources you have, how many people you have, but we need to keep the overall goal in mind the whole time. That goal is to keep perfusion to both the heart and the brain. The strategy here is going to be to know your problems that you're going to run into ahead of time and then have pre-planned solutions to those problems.
You mentioned this is stressful. I mean, we've all been in these cases, these situations. There are lots of moving parts. What should we be focusing on?
So these patients are really fragile. There are two main reasons for this. First off, there's the code itself. Whatever caused the initial arrest, but also iatrogenic injuries from CPR, rib fractures, pneumothorax, as well as these patients are in a pathophysiologic state that's called post-cardiac arrest syndrome, which, while it may not be the most creative name, I think the just general concept of what's happening here is important. They have hypoxic brain injury, myocardial dysfunction, a systemic ischemia and reperfusion injury, and a large SIRS response. It puts them in this really fragile state, and it can make it really hard to diagnose what's going on. Do they have poor cardiac function because of the code or because of this pathophysiologic state? It's not only hard to diagnose what's going on, but what I want to stress is that the small things matter here, that these patients are fragile, so we need to focus and sweat the small stuff for these patients.
That's such a great point that these small things matter. They add up and make a huge difference for these patients. Walk me through your quick 10,000-foot overview.
So the overview here, this mental model, is going to focus on circulation, then airway, then breathing, and then stuff. So CABS, the CABS approach. For circulation, we want very close monitoring of perfusion, and you need multiple modalities to do this. Our modalities are going to be an arterial line, ultrasound or Doppler, a pulse ox, and inline waveform end-tidal CO2. We want to focus on a higher MAP for these patients with immediate vasopressors and fluids as appropriate. Norepinephrine is going to be your go-to. Moving to airway, eventually, if they don't already, the patient is going to need a definitive airway. You're going to want to resuscitate them, however, before you intubate them. You're going to want to use an induction and paralytic to give you the best chance at first pass success, and you're going to want that inline waveform end-tidal CO2. As far as breathing goes, you want to keep everything normal. Normal oxygen, normal CO2. We want to be very mindful of overbagging these patients. And finally, for stuff, this is where you're going to get your EKG. You're going to do your point of care ultrasound, doing a rush exam, focusing on targeted temperature management, which we'll get into. And really, this is where we're going to use a checklist to help us remember those little things.
Let's dive into some of the details, and we're going to start with C for circulation. What do you have for us here?
Okay, circulation. This is the big one. Remember, we're trying to perfuse the heart and the brain. These patients have a high risk of recoding again. We've all been in that situation where we get the pulse back and then it's gone again. You're going to want multiple ways to know if your patient still has a pulse. And what we know is that palpation is just inaccurate. This is our least reliable method. So I want to go through multiple ways of ensuring that our patient still has a pulse, which again are going to depend on what resources you have. My preferred method is an arterial line, especially a femoral arterial line in this situation. As soon as possible, I like to get one of these in because it can help me know when that patient has a pulse, when that patient loses a pulse, and if we're doing compressions again when we get ROSC a second time. It is important, however, that you don't lose focus on the overall resuscitation. It is a procedure to do, and if you're the only person or there's a lot of other things going on, it can be very easy to become task saturated with that to the detriment of the rest of the care of the patient. Your other option here is using the ultrasound. And as opposed to using your fingers to palpate for the pulse, is using the ultrasound to look for either a femoral pulse or a carotid pulse. If that's not an option to you, even using a Doppler to make sure that you're still hearing that continuous pulse. Your next option is the pulse ox. This is great. We should all be able to have this. We're looking for that persistent waveform, and that's a great indicator of the mechanical heart rate, what is actually getting perfused to the patient. And finally, we're looking for that end-tidal capnography, that waveform end-tidal capnography with a persistent elevation above 30 to 40. You're going to want to check both the heart rate and the blood pressure, and we'll go through those different goals here. So you've just gotten a patient that's had return spontaneous circulation. First goal, blood pressure. For these patients, I like to shoot for a MAP of 80. I will say that this is controversial. Talk to a bunch of different people, you'll probably get different answers. I would say you 100% need a MAP above 65. I do like to target a higher MAP in these patients unless there's severe myocardial dysfunction. When they are hypotensive post-ROSC, we need to not only figure out why, but we need to empirically treat at the same time. And I think the best way to do this is with having vasopressors immediately at the bedside. I actually like to have them running during the code so that as soon as we get that pulse back, we already have the norepinephrine running. And that is my go-to pressor after cardiac arrest. Epi is also an option. It may not be as good though if your patient is having recurrent VFib or VTAC. Vasopressin is a great adjunct, especially if they're super acidotic. I would really try to avoid dopamine in these patients. We also know the other way we treat hypotension was fluids. And yes, a lot of these patients are probably going to get 1 to 2 liters up front, but I think the key here is to not blindly administer massive amounts of fluids. We've seen this play out across a lot of other diseases that that's just not the way to go. So we are empirically treating their hypotension, but we need to figure out why they're hypotensive. I think the rush exam is the best way to do this, the rapid ultrasound for shock and hypotension. Rule out that pneumothorax, rule out the tamponade, look for right ventricular dilation to maybe indicate a pulmonary embolism, but remember that that right ventricle can dilate from the code itself. You're going to look for that myocardial dysfunction, which again can be the etiology of the arrest or from the post-cardiac arrest syndrome. I think serial reassessments here are key. Let's talk about the heart rate. If the patient is bradycardic, check the blood pressure. They may be severely hypertensive from the amount of epinephrine we've given them, and that's probably a physiologic response. If you think it's an appropriate response, just continue to monitor, and that may drop soon. If they are hypotensive and bradycardic, think if you think the bradycardia is actually driving that hypotension. And we know how to do this. You'll try atropine, and it may or may not work, but really what we're going to do in these situations is get the epinephrine and pacing ready.
Awesome content for circulation. Like you said, a lot of this is going to depend on what resources you have. If you're at an academic center, great. You have that capability for one person to do the ART line, another can do the ultrasounds. But if you're at a community shop, it's just you, a nurse, a tech, different story. You have to be very careful about your priorities, but ultrasound definitely helpful here. I also like to have norepinephrine running during the code. If you do obtain ROSC, they're less likely to drop their pressures again. That was C. What do you have for airway?
When it comes to the airway, we're going to be talking about if they weren't intubated during the code. Maybe you're running this code through a supraglottic like an iGel or an LMA, which is completely reasonable, especially if you have less resources during that code. If they don't have a definitive airway, they are going to need one. But I think one of the biggest mistakes I see here are people rushing to get that tube in immediately post-ROSC. We know for every other scenario that we need to resuscitate before we intubate, and that is definitely key here. I can't tell you exactly when they're going to need the tube. I would say once you've gotten them stabilized out, and probably before they leave that room for any additional testing. You're going to want that inline end-tidal CO2 reading beforehand. You're going to want that hooked up to your BVM. And so you want to address any hypoxia, hypotension, and acidosis. We know that's the reason patients code during and post intubation. And these patients are super high risk for all of those. We also know that increased attempts at intubation leads to higher mortality. So you want to do everything you can to maximize your first pass success. That means I think we should be using both an induction agent and a paralytic in these patients, even if they still have altered mental status. If they have a pulse, they can have upper airway muscle tone that can make this tube more difficult. Now, the choice of induction agent and paralytic is going to be a source of constant controversy, I am assuming, forever in emergency medicine. However, I think there's some things we can take away from this here. So remember, these unconscious patients can still have that upper airway muscle tone, and that can make your tube more difficult. So you're going to want an induction agent and a paralytic. My go-to induction agent is usually ketamine here. I think etomidate is still appropriate. As far as paralytic, if they are more hemodynamically unstable, you may need to double your dosage, and I think rocuronium is your go-to here. You're unlikely to know the true potassium given the ischemia and reperfusion injury, so I tend to lean towards rocuronium in these patients. I do also think these patients deserve post-intubation analgesia and sedation. Even though they may be altered, we don't know what kind of awareness they have. Especially when we're using that longer-acting paralytic, we need to provide them with the appropriate analgesia and sedation. We do need to consider things like neuroprognostication, so we're going to want to use shorter-acting agents. If a ketamine drip is an option, that's great. I've never really had that as an option for me, so sometimes what I'll do is redose my ketamine immediately after the intubation if that's an option. That's really easy to forget to do, however. Once their pressure is stabilized out, I will still use propofol and use propofol with a little bit higher of a vasopressor if needed. It's quick on and quick off. You can also use fentanyl with a bolus and a drip for analgesia. While the drip may not be ideal in the long term in the ICU to affect neuroprognostication, for the short time they're with you in the emergency department, I believe this should be okay. I would say we should probably try as much as possible to avoid Versed drips for post-intubation sedation. We've seen that those are associated with higher rates of delirium, more days on the vent. I would try to avoid these unless you have no other options. Your other basic things here along with airway, NG and OG tube, head of the bed elevated. Don't forget your basics.
All of these are great points, especially that airway, it's not your biggest priority. Obviously, we're most concerned about circulation, but you do want to optimize your first pass success. I like to use ketamine initially as my induction agent, and you can have a standing order for repeat administrations. That will give you an analgesic and sedative. Propofol will work here, but you might need a vasopressor running as well. I also completely agree with avoiding Versed, other benzos, lots of long-term issues in the ICU for these patients. How about B for breathing?
We want to keep things normal. As far as oxygenation goes, we want to avoid both hypoxia, but also hyperoxia. Remember, the little things matter here. You're going to target an SpO2 of about 92 to 95%. That's not necessarily 100%. Which means you can start down titrating your FiO2 before that ABG. As far as the CO2, we're going to avoid hypocapnia and hypercapnia at this time. There may be more evidence that comes out on this down the line, but for now, try to target an end tidal of around 30 to 35 with an ideal goal of a PaCO2 of 35 to 45. You're going to want to use lung protective vent settings unless it's an asthmatic or COPD. And a big thing we run into here is overbagging with our bag valve mask. Remember, this can decrease our venous return, so we want to be very mindful here.
The big takeaway, keep things normal. Stay away from hypoxia, hyperoxia, also hypocapnia. You do want to avoid overbagging. Zach, you have a stuff category. What's going on with this one?
This is all the other things that have to happen. We've gotten our vitals stabilized out, and this is the time for the physical checklist. I'll run through some of the things, but I think the biggest takeaway here is find a checklist that you like and have that for all these little things. So you're going to want that EKG. Usually we're going to get one right after return of spontaneous circulation, but also about 15 to 20 minutes out because that's going to really show us if we have a STEMI or not. We're going to do the ultrasound as stated, point of care, glucose, and a broad workup. I personally don't think that this is the time to be overly thoughtful with your ordering. These patients are sick and often come in highly undifferentiated. You're going to get your basics, coags, tropes, thyroid, pregnancy test as indicated. I have a very low threshold to add on antibiotics to these patients. I'd say that's a good rule for any patient with undifferentiated hypotension. And without a clear history, my threshold to add on broad spectrum antibiotics is very low. Steroids, controversial. I tend to give them especially if they have refractory hypotension. As far as workup, most of these patients are going to get a chest x-ray. As far as CT scan goes, I do tend to pan scan these patients, especially if there is no known etiology of the arrest. I'm looking at them both for the cause of the arrest, but also for sequelae from the CPR. I'll be getting that CT head, that CT looking for PE or dissection, that CT abdomen pelvis looking for a sepsis source. Again, that's a lot to remember, but I think utilizing a checklist to help cognitively offload here is critical.
That checklist, super important. Just print one out, have it on you during the shift. It can make a world of difference, I promise you. I'm also a proponent of CT here, mainly on the way up to the ICU. It will help your intensivists, and it can potentially give you the answer for the patient's shock. Let's get to temperature management. What are you targeting?
My goal temp is less than 37.8 degrees Celsius. I think at this point, the evidence is supporting just avoiding fever. Once they get to the ICU, they may have other protocols, but I think maybe doing a single dose of acetaminophen and just focusing on avoiding that fever is what we should be focusing on in the emergency department.
There has been a lot of study recently on who needs to go to the cath lab. What are your thoughts?
So much controversy in this topic overall, but I think these are really good things to be going through. So cath lab for me, ROSC plus STEMI goes to the cath lab. I think this is still a class one recommendation, especially that EKG 15 to 20 minutes post ROSC. We know the initial EKG almost always looks bad. It looks ischemic, nonspecific changes sometimes. Getting that EKG at about 15 to 20 minutes, STEMI to the cath lab. As far as ROSC with no STEMI, I say continue to trend your EKGs. Definitely try to get that history. If you have a high suspicion or even a moderate suspicion, get your interventionalist involved. There are a lot of factors that go into this decision, and it's also going to be somewhat institutional dependent.
Great stuff, Zach. I'm going to try and summarize the CABS approach. First, circulation. Closely monitor perfusion, whether that's an ultrasound, ARTLINE, end-tidal CO2, or your pulse ox. Maintain the MAP with immediate vasopressors and fluids. Next is airway. Get the definitive airway before they leave the ED. Resuscitate before you intubate. Use an induction agent plus paralytic to improve your first pass success, and make sure you have inline waveform capnography set up. Next is B for breathing. Keep things normal. Be mindful of overbagging. Finally is stuff. Get that EKG, perform a focused POCUS exam looking for the cause of the arrest, avoid fever, and use a checklist to remember the little things. Zach, thanks for coming on the podcast. Anything else you want to add?
This is my mental model. I think it's important that you just have a mental model. You may take things from this podcast, and you may come up with your own. I think having a mental model to help ground you in that moment is essential, and knowing what your approach is going to be ahead of time is essential. You're just cycling through, looking up at the blood pressure. What's my MAP? Now looking at the pulse ox. Are we oxygenating okay? Are we overbagging? Let's get our EKG. And you're continuously cycling through circulation, airway, breathing, stuff. Make sure that you have your own strategic approach for this second sickest set of patients. I really appreciate you having me.
Thanks for listening, and stay safe and healthy, everyone.